Welcome to Ray and Tay Today. It's Wednesday. Wednesday, and it's a busy Wednesday at that. This is Ray. That's Tall Rayside.
And hello, everyone. It is Tay, Eric Taylor, and yes, it is also very busy. So if you, you know, have some time, join us on the ride at 718-664-9098. Have some fun talking some sports with us. You want to hit us up on the Twitter or you know, even on the Gmail, it's rayandtaytoday@gmail.com, or tweet us. Obviously, it's R-A-E. You should know because you've been listening to us for quite a little while now. And, you know, just thank you, man. Join us, and we're going to have fun. We got a lot of breaking news, a lot of stuff. It's a wild Wednesday, and Ray's going to tell you how we're going to break it down for you.
Well, we are action-packed. So first, we have our breaking news segment because we like to bring everybody the breaking news. Today, we could do just a whole show on the breaking news. But we're going to keep it going, and we're going to, after breaking news, we're going to preview this Miami-Buffalo Thursday night football game. Then we're going to get into a little bit of college basketball, what we had last night. And ESPN had that 24-hour college basketball marathon. We'll talk a little NBA, some Knicks, some we have a Knicks being the only undefeated team.
5-0, baby.
Woo! Whoa, we got some bad teams out there. We got some teams in transition now with the Lakers. Good game last night with the Lakers and the Spurs. And then finally, we got our Where You At Wednesday segment with a high school college basketball legend and a guy with some problems but with a lot of game. So we'll
never
get into
became
that
what he should have been, man. We'll talk about a legend from Brooklyn. He's from Brooklyn.
He's from all over the place. He went to five high schools. But we'll get into that.
Oh, man. Well, listen, let's talk first with something close to my heart, right? Then we can go to your heart. My Steelers, man. Big Ben. Listen, we won Monday night. Ugly game, overtime, 16-13 over the Chiefs. It was ugly before Ben got hurt, right? But it's not just the SC strain of the shoulder, you know, which is, you know, on the clavicle between there and the shoulder, but he's got a dislocated rib. Now, Romo had this last year. It is dangerous. They're saying it could basically hit an aorta. So he's sitting in a chair. He said he slept about 4 hours in 2 days, and it looks bad. But listen, Leftwich is a professional. He's won a lot of games in this league. And I think, you know, obviously 2 years ago we went 3-1 without Ben. And I think, you know, we let Ben rest for 2 or 3 weeks and get him healthy for the playoff run, you know.
Yeah, you have to.
And I think it looks like also Nick Foles will be starting. My Vic will be out. We'll keep an eye on, you know, for Friday's show to let you know about Alex Smith and Jay Cutler with the concussions. But there's definitely some injuries. I already told you Fred Jackson will be out for the Thursday game. So it's kind of interesting. But really, what's interesting to me, forget about the Steelers-Ravens, you know, that we know Ben's going to be gone. But what the heck is going on in the media in New York and the Daily News and the Jets? It is just this insane asylum.
It was
Break
bound
it
to happen.
It's bound to happen, though.
So the problem is New York is the media market and the largest media market in the U.S., potentially in the world. And you've got all these guys with microphones and a bad Jet team, and you stick a microphone in a guy's face enough times.
3-6.
At a 3-6, and you ask provocative questions. Now, for a couple years, Rex Ryan was taking the heat and making all of the statements, and everybody was saying, oh, Rex talks too much. But to his defense, it's part of a strategy of bringing all the attention to him and letting his players just play. For good or for bad, everything was focused on Rex. But
well, do you think he should put in the Belichick rule? No talking to the media?
You can't do that now. That's not him. I mean, that's not him. 20 years into your coaching career, you can't change and become somebody else. You know, Rex is a free-willing guy. He wanted to be, you know, the big bad wolf and take all the media attention. You know, people love playing for him, and part of the reason why they love playing for him is that you can be yourself with Rex. Whereas, you know, ask Wes Welker and all these other guys, you can't really be yourself with
I respect the offensive lineman for putting his name on it, and he was like, look, all the quarterbacks know Sanchez is the best we got. He's our guy. We're riding with him. But when you got two other guys, you know, saying anonymous stuff, talking bad about Tebow, saying he's terrible or the Wildcat doesn't work, we can't do it, it's kind of punkish, especially since Tebow and his Wildcat or whatever you want to call it beat the Jets last year on Thursday Night Football. So the Jets look stupid, right? They look stupid. And for me, like we always say, and we've always talked about it, if you got two quarterbacks, you don't have one, but do one or the other. Put in Tebow and bench Sanchez, or stop doing Tebow and just let Sanchez get a flow and a rhythm for the whole entire game and see what he can do. But to have, you know, Tebow 8-10 or 5-12 plays a game, it's not working. It's stupid.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I can't argue with that. You're neither here nor there. But the problem is it was so predictable. You know, I said it would happen when the Jets were 3-5 or 4-4, and the Jets are 3-6, and it's a media, you know, it's a media circus. It's a media frenzy. They love it. It's so juicy. If you're selling, you know, tabloids, or if you're selling the back pages of the Daily News or the New York Post, why not, right? It's just there. It's low hanging fruit. But anyway, this will go on all year. That's the thing. Until they make a shakeup, which they have to at the end of the year, this is going to go on every week.
Well, hey, enough about that. Let's swing on over to the Major League Baseball. Now, before I ask you to break down this trade for me, I want to just, you know, give a shout-out to my man, Torrey Hunter, left the Angels, signed a 2-year, $26 million contract with the Detroit Tigers. And he's one of the better guys in baseball. He'll be good for the Detroit community. And I think as a veteran, he'll, you know, help the Tigers out. So I think overall it's a good move for them. You know, and I don't know if the Angels really need Torrey anymore with some of their, you know, Trout and some of their young guys in the outfield. But why don't you tell me what the heck's going on in Miami, Ray? What are the Marlins doing?
I have no idea. I mean, I know what I'm trying to pretend like
we
I
know,
didn't know.
But
we know,
tell us about
but
the
we
trade
don't
first.
Know. The problem, all right, here's the trade. Here are the facts. And then we can talk about the commentary. But the facts are that the Marlins started the season with a whole bunch of high-profile players, and they win 69 games. And we know about them in the middle of the season getting rid of Omar Infante, getting rid of Hanley Ramirez, getting rid of Heath Bell. So that was shedding major contracts and, you know, big stars. And now they pulled off a trade where basically they send their highest-priced players. So they send to the Toronto Blue Jays Jose Reyes, Josh Johnson, and Mark Burley, so two pitchers, the shortstop, the catcher, John Buck, and the speedy infielder, outfielder, Emilio Bonifacio, to the Blue Jays in exchange for basically three prospects and two players. So it's a clear salary dump on the part of the Marlins. And the Blue Jays said, you know what, we need firepower to get, you know, to compete with the Rays and the Orioles. I mean, because the Blue Jays sent them Yunel Escobar, Henderson Alvarez, and Jeff Mathis as major league players, so nobody really jumps off at you. And then three prospects, an outfielder,
yeah,
a shortstop,
to be pretty
and
good prospects.
And two pitchers. Yeah.
And let me say this, and I give credit to Mike Francesa. He made a good point today on WFAN. Reyes is going to hate Toronto. He's going to hate playing on that carpet. It's not good for his knees. He probably will play 60 games if not demand a trade. So I don't know if that's a good trade for them. I mean, I think he's going from, you know, Florida tax-free to Toronto paying, you know, crazy taxes, so he'll probably wind up losing from his money an extra $3 to $5 million, they're saying. It's just not a good look, man. I don't think Toronto should keep him. I think they should try to move him to the Red Sox somewhere else. It's not going to work out.
But how
it's
many
be
teams
a mess.
Out there can afford to absorb a $20 million shortstop that is injury prone? So the
I don't know why Toronto would really want him, to be honest with you.
Well, no, they need firepower, right? To compete in the AL East. And they're projecting the Yankees to be third and the Rays and the Orioles to be first and second. But to compete in the AL East, they got Bautista, they got Encarnacion, you know, Lynn went to the minor leagues and then came back. But really, they need some juice in that lineup. And they love the fact that he can, you know, hopefully get back to his ways of hitting, you know, 310, 320, you know, 20, 30 triples, steal some bases.
We'll see. We shall see. I think it's a mess. But let's sort of, you know, leave that for another day. Let's talk about
awards.
Some awards.
Yeah.
AL and NL managers of the year. Obviously, in the AL, you have Bob Melvin, who did a fantastic job. And then you have in the National League, Davey Johnson. You know, who, you know, losing his pitcher, you know, before the end of the season with the playoffs. That's it's a great story that the Nationals still kept going. Obviously, Bob Melvin, that's a great story in the AL. So I think they both deserve it. I mean, you could have debated, I guess you could have debated both of them. What do you think about the award winners?
No,
for
I think they were
the
both.
Year?
Look, Bob Melvin, nobody expected Oakland, especially after the first half they had. Nobody expected them. They were a 500 team, and then to come
and the scrappy,
the
way that they did it, right? No big bats, no whatever. They just kept winning and winning and coming back in small ball, and so he
deserves that. The only other
person
you would say would be Buck Showalter because of what he did in Baltimore.
Buck was incredible in Baltimore.
And
I
just think that Oakland actually won the division, and Oakland at the midway mark was about 500 team. So the second half of the season, Bob Melvin.
Oh, to overcome Texas was the most impressive thing. So I mean,
everybody thought
he had
that was the sure thing in baseball was Texas winning the AL West.
Yeah.
So both of them really deserved it. Maybe you could give special consideration to Buck Showalter because he definitely deserved it, turning around the just the mentality, the psyche in Baltimore, not making
the playoffs. And then for the Cy Youngs, that were just announced about an hour ago in the American League, in the tightest race ever since '69 when there was a tie, you have David Price, 14 first place votes, beating out Verlander with 13 first place votes. So congrats to David Price. Of the Rays, and that was he came in second
close,
place last year.
It should be a tie. I feel like if it's that close, it should
be
like you need to beat a guy by more than one first place vote. Like if it's that close, call it a day. Give it a
he
tie.
He got it. And then the National League, our man from the New York Mets, the first knuckleballer ever, right? That's so interesting because Phil and Joe Negro, the best they ever came in was second place. I did not know that, so that was kind of interesting. R.A. Dickey, the knuckleballer for the Mets, wins, and the Mets are trying to work on a contract with him. So now that he got this in his back pocket, they best to pay that man. And also there are in good negotiations for you Mets fans out there to listen to the show with David Wright. So hopefully they keep him because he's kind of the glue to the Mets. So R.A. Dickey gets it, man, and, you know, he deserved it. Gio came in second, and Gio had a great year. I think he came in second, and then obviously your boy from the Dodgers, who was 14-9 but had the best ERA. Yeah, Kershaw, he had the best ERA out there. So they're all three great pitchers, but RA definitely, he was a hero the most this year. So.
Yeah, no doubt. We had a long session about that. Yeah, he deserves it. Yeah, can't fight that. And the American League, like I said, it's close. To me, it was just a tie. They both deserved it. But good for David Price, you know. They're both the class of the American League pitchers right now.
Yeah, and pitching will win you championships. Just ask everybody about what the Giants did and how good their pitching was. So why don't we just take a quick little break, and then we can jump into the preview of Thursday Night Football. Rantech.
A A tornado flew around my roof before you came. Excuse the mess it made, it usually doesn't rain in Southern California, much like Arizona. My eyes.
Much like Arizona.
Football.
Oh, man. Okay, so listen, wait. The first thing I can say is I hope Hank is listening. It's Thursday. His Dolphins are the national televised game. He should be happy, excited, and he better hope that Reggie Bush and Philbin are on the same page, although I don't think Philbin should have benched Reggie Bush just for fumbling because you don't bench the best player on your team. I think that's kind of like – I think that's kind of corny. You wouldn't bench Brady. You wouldn't bench, you know, whatever. So, but – I think that the Dolphins have got to pull it together because the Bills' defense is horrible. Even though you bought all that money, like the Redskins used to try to buy a defense over the years when they got Bruce Smith and Deion Sanders, I think that the Bills tried to buy a defense and it's just not working out, you know. So
yeah.
I got Ryan Tannehill in two of my leagues, in my fantasy football quarterback, so I am a Dolphin fan.
Well, good
That's
luck with
I
that, homie.
I wanted to say, well, listen, the Bills' secondary and their defense – against the run, the Bills are ranked like 28th this year in the NFL. So you can run on the Bills, and their pass was like 24th, I think.
And Bush ran for 200 against Buffalo last year.
That's what I'm saying. So to me, I think we got a chance for a shootout here. You know, I think Miami could win this one like 30-27. It's going to be one of them games where they just go back and forth.
I'm just worried about your boy Tannehill putting up numbers. I like Miami to win. I like Miami to win. You know, even though it's up in Buffalo, I think Miami wins and goes to 5-5. But I don't look.
What do you think about Fitzpatrick? Do you think this is maybe they made a mistake by giving him sort of that big contract? Because to me, I think he's got talent, and you know, unfortunately, the Bills never stay healthy. You know, the last 2 years, you know, with their injuries, and Fred Jackson will miss the game, and you know, Spiller's a beast, so he'll be starting and be fine. But I just think that there's something with Fitzpatrick where, he'll get you 300 yards, but he might get you three interceptions, and he can't stop making the bad turnovers.
Yeah, and that's my problem. And the kid from Harvard who's, you know, supposed to be a real smart, intellectual guy, he's got – you know how some people we say, well, they don't have the offensive tools. So if you look at the receivers in Jacksonville or, you know, the running game in Carolina – without, you know, what's going on there. And, you know, so other than Steve Smith in Carolina and also in, you know, in the beginning of the year, CJ2K wasn't running so well, so that didn't do his quarterback
any good.
Yeah,
the Bills have everything.
But, yeah,
two running backs.
So they have an offensive
head coach. Scott Chandler, a tight end.
They have an offensive head coach in Chan Gailey. They have a great running back tandem and even trio, but let's say just a tandem of Spiller and Jackson. And they've got Stevie Johnson and Jones as the wide receivers. So, and they've got a decent offensive line. So, to me, he's got it about as good as you can get it. An offensive head coach, skill position players, a decent offensive line. So, for him to have 17 touchdowns and 10 interceptions.
Well, that one receiver went down early in the year. Donald Jones was more like their number three. So, their number two receiver got hurt.
Stevie Johnson's a quality number one, and they get decent play for him.
Yeah, he's not a great number one, but I mean he's got decent talent. I'll give you that.
And to have that running game with Spiller and Jackson, I mean,
yeah,
I don't know.
He just makes
got
too many mistakes, and I don't trust him.
Yeah. So did they make a mistake? You know, look, I don't know what their other options were, right? Didn't they bring in Vince Young and they looked at other quarterbacks? And so
yeah.
I'm not sure they had that many.
And Trent Edwards never worked out, you know,
yeah,
the old Stanford quarterback. So it's just kind of a mess. And you can honestly say there's probably three or four teams in the NFL, again, that could be looking for a quarterback come for the college draft, the Jets, the Chiefs, the Bills, and maybe, you know, depends on what you think about the Jaguars with Gabbert, you know. But
right.
I think they're going to probably roll with him and that Minnesota will roll with Ponder. So, but you got those three teams that could be a question mark for, you know, looking to get a new quarterback. So, and maybe also throw in the Cardinals in there too, right?
Well, you tell me. What are they thinking between Kyle
well,
and Kelton?
Listen, I think out here they're sort of not too pleased with either, but it's hard to judge it when you don't have an offensive line. And so Massey and the other young offensive linemen have not been doing that good, and they've had injuries like the Eagles at offensive line. But I don't think that if they're honest with themselves, I don't think that Cobb has and, you know, look, Beanie Wells comes back this week, so good for him. But they lost, you know, Ryan Williams, and they've had plenty injuries all year, not just the offensive line, but running back as well. You have to love the Cardinals receivers. Fitzgerald and Roberts have been good, and they're hoping the Hausler, the young tight end, develops because Todd Heap never did anything. So we'll see. Maybe they're in the mix for a quarterback as well. But so I got to say Miami 30-27. But what's your score, man?
Ooh, I don't think Miami can score that much. But well, against this Bills team, I suppose. But again, Miami's not explosive. So I like
some weeks they are though.
Yeah, I like Miami in a close one. I think they'll win, but I think they'll win something like 24-20.
Okay, I could rock with that. Could rock with
yeah,
that.
As long as Tannehill gets to your points.
Yeah, well, listen, I got to go with him, right? Jay Cutler's banged up. I thought about picking up Nick Foles. Why don't you break down the bye week so everybody is the last bye week as we push to the fantasy playoffs.
Exactly. This is week 11. So remember, if you got to make some fantasy moves for the bye weeks, this is the last and final bye week. We've got on bye this week Tennessee, Minnesota, the New York Football Giants, and Seattle.
And there's some tired teams. It's so funny because if you think about it, right, they're the last to have their bye weeks, and if you think about all four of those teams, they're a pretty tired bunch, you know. You know, give Seattle credit. They didn't look tired against the Jets, but they're all pretty tired bunch. So I think those four teams will get a push, you know, going back to the second half. I think the Giants need it more than anybody, right? They're more veterans. I think they're really tired.
Yeah,
so,
they're all in the – I mean, Tennessee's kind of on the outskirts, but they're all in the playoff mix. So Seattle, the Giants, Minnesota, you know, they could definitely use this second-half push to make the playoffs, you know, especially –
Hey, but my Steelers are without Ben. Tennessee beat them on the head-to-head, so Tennessee still got a shot. Because right now we're the second wild card. We're in sixth place. Tennessee could still push up, so, you know, you never know. You never know what they could do. I mean, Colts got
Tennessee.
The 50. Tennessee. Well, let's switch it, man, to some hoops. You want to go college?
Up.
You want to go pro? You know,
let's go college. Let's talk about the young Bucks. Did you catch some of those games last night? First of all, kudos to ESPN because that's pretty cool.
I love
they ran
it.
20. It ended up being 23
from Gonzaga
hours
to West Virginia at 12 midnight,
that's
which was just great. Yeah, let me tell you this. I saw a quick bit of that Gonzaga-West Virginia game, but the one thing I could say, Gonzaga can shoot it.
Yes.
Woo! They blew West Virginia off the floor, and Gonzalez can shoot it. Matter of fact, I want to check out that game. I think it's this Saturday. Gonzaga-Butler is going to be a great one. There's some good college basketball coming up, man.
The Ziggy Zags.
I'm hyped. Well, for me, the first thing I want to talk about, right, is maybe one of the last games of the night, Duke-Kentucky, a classic. This rivalry, I guess, of probably the Duke-Kentucky and North Carolina, the three greatest universities of winningest programs, you know, plus you could throw in Kansas. But Duke-Kentucky, man, who had that great game and Christian Laettner was there and, you know, taking it back
92.
To – taking you
that
back 20, I mean, can you believe 20
years? That was 20 years ago with Jamal Mashburn,
you know,
and a bunch of walk-ons, basically.
I thought they had it. I thought Sean Woods, when he hit the basket, I was like, yo, they got this. And Grant Hill with that pass down to Laettner, wow.
We were on spring break. I was in Atlantic City, and we watched the game, and the game was in Philly. And after, it was at the old Spectrum.
At the Spectrum.
And after the game, everybody came to Atlantic City. It was crazy.
I'll never forget that. I was up in the dorm room in Maryland, and me and Sean were watching the game, and it was just on and popping, man. But that shot, incredible. But last night, you know what I like to see? Calipari is a great recruiter. Those young boys, they can play, right? Duke wins the game, so you give them their kudos and their props. What was it, 75-68,
yeah.
So they win by seven, but it was definitely, you know, closer than that in a sense. But what I like to see seniors. It's nice to see seniors. It's not a knock on Calipari, but Duke to see Steph Curry develop, and it looks like he's going to be a leader now that Rivers is gone, and he's been there, you know, and he's a senior. Kelly, to see Mason Plumlee, who's active and big in the post, and, you know, will probably be a first-round pick. It's just nice to see, and obviously Steph Curry from them Curry boys, right, you know, with his dad, Del Curry, probably one of the best shooting two guards ever, and Curry over there at Golden State.
You see that stat
nice.
That when if he stays healthy and stays the whole season and keeps scoring at this pace, that he and his brother will become the highest scoring duo in NCAA history, the Curry brothers.
The Curry brothers?
Yes, Steph and Seth will become, well, they'll
Steph
pass the Hansbro kids as being the highest scoring duo, brother duo in NCAA.
I like that. You know who
I like,
though?
What did you think of the Kentucky team?
I like the good. Okay, first of all, Goodwin is nice.
I like that kid, Poitras.
Poitras is nice. He's, you know, tough on the glass.
He's athletic.
Athletic, aggressive. But I like Nerlens Noel.
You like Nerlens? That's your boy, Nerlens?
He's a little slim. He's going to, you know, he got the Big Daddy Kane, and the kid in play, he's going to grow into himself. But I think that he's a little bit better than people were saying. They were like, oh, he's no Anthony Davis. But you know what? He's a daggone good player.
But
I mean,
you know
he was
what?
Taking
with,
it.
With Anthony Davis, remember that he was a guard for most of his college, high school career. So he has the dexterity of being a guard. Typically, we forget that centers, big men develop slowly. So think about all of the centers that have been great. They also played, except for, well, even Shaq. Shaq played for 3 years in high school, Tim Duncan in college. 3 years from Shaq, 4 years from Duncan.
Olajuwon, Patrick,
years,
all of them, yeah.
Yeah, Olajuwon, 4 years from Patrick Ewing. So all of these classic centers played for 4 years. So I hope this kid Nerlens doesn't do, you know, a DeMarcus Cousins or, you know, obviously Anthony Davis. I think he's going to be Rookie of the Year, even though you got your boy Damian Lillard going out there. But I hope this
Don't
kid
leave.
Nerlens stays
who
in
had
school
another
for 22-9
last night.
No,
Damian Lillard 22-9.
But I hope this kid, Nerlens, look, it's too early. We just saw him for one game. But I hope he stays in school for at least 2 years, 3 years, and works on his game because he does have potential, and he's one of these kids that looks like he's always been a big man, not Anthony Davis, who was a guard up until his junior year in high school. So stay in school, work on your game. Maybe Calipari gets a couple of these kids to stay because they have potential, but they're not the five freshmen that he had last year. You know, they're not Davis.
No, that was special.
That's once in a lifetime. And they're not.
I think he'll stay 2 years. I don't think, you know, nowadays, if you got that type of talent, most cats won't stay after, you know, 2 years. But we'll see, you know, see what happens. But I definitely, you know, Coach K, great coach. I mean, obviously, I think the North Carolina team is going to be better than people thought. Obviously, NC State is, you know, high ranking and for the ACC and top 10. I think James Michael McAdoo, who's on this list of the early preseason Naismith Award, you know, candidates. I think McAdoo in the first game he had like 26 or 28. He's gonna have a big year, right? With all these guys leaving, Barnes and Zeller and Henson to the pros. I think McAdoo finally gets to take over at North Carolina and dominate,
He doesn't have a great point guard yet. You know, there's some youth back there in the backcourt. But, yeah, we'll see. Did you catch any of the Michigan State-Kansas game?
Yeah,
Keith
man.
Keith Appling?
Listen, Keith Appling and then the Harris kid, they're both – what I like about Michigan State is one thing is he recruits athletes that are versatile and defense, rebound. And to me, I think what's going to be nice is – they're already pretty good. They started off slow against UConn, and that's why they lost the game because offensively, you know, they just weren't there. But this team, they're going to be good. Michigan State is definitely going to be good because that's not a bad Kansas team. And Michigan State, they played ball, and Izzo's a Hall of Famer, okay? He's a Hall of Famer coach.
Oh, for sure.
Always going to get those guys going, and I like those kids. Appling attacks, man. He's good.
Yeah, well, you know, and Tom Izzo is a perfect combination of a system coach, but he also recruits athletes and what seems like coachable kids, you know. So yeah, Tom Izzo. If I was a Michigan State fan, I'd be happy to be proud to be a Michigan State fan. But you know me, I'm a Carolina fan. It's St. John's. What do you think about our Johnnies? Lavin
like
back. You know, fighting
like
cancer.
I like the size. You know, I think that you know obviously this is a top 25 recruiting class, and I think it shows. I think St. John's is gonna be kid. It's going to be tough. I like this kid. Mike Moser at UNLV is going to be tough. There's a lot of teams, but I think, you know, the Big East is going to be pretty good. Obviously, UConn got that win over Michigan State. I think Georgetown's got some guys. I'm excited about St. John's, though, man. Obviously, getting basketball. And look, having Mo Harkless leave early and, you know, go
that
to the pros.
That
was tough, and that hurts. But also, I think it's showing, you know, it's almost like a curse, but then it's almost a good thing, right? Because if he does well this year and he looked good against the Knicks last night at Orlando, it's good for recruiting, right? I hate to say it, but if your guy leaves after 1 year and then he goes to the NBA and then has a pretty good rookie year, other kids are like, yo, St. John's is real, yo. They got a kid in the NBA. So, like, to me, it hurts the team initially, but I think he got a great recruiting class, and I think he's starting to get another good recruiting class for next season. You know, guys
yeah,
are still waiting
to
commit.
One thing Lavin could do is recruit. We know he can go into the home and start talking that, you know, talking up
that
the program.
Slim
exactly.
Yeah, nah, it's going to be interesting. I want to see this UCLA team, Kyle Anderson and Shabazz Muhammad. That's going to be exciting to me to see.
Well, they
got to
work out
Shabazz's
whole probation issue and, you know, how many games it's going to be. At first it was the season and then 10 games. And, you know, I just hope they get to the bottom of that fast, you know, because I hate to see the kid lose more games than they have to. The NCAA seems to be moving slowly on this one.
Yeah, I think, you know, the NCAA, it's funny, man. It feels like with football, guys get to play. They turn the other cheek so much. With basketball, they seem to be a little bit tougher on guys. And I wonder if that has to do with the money influence because it kind of pisses me off. As you know, I love both sports, but sometimes I think the basketball guys are judged and watched a little bit more the critical eye and harshly than the football guys. It looks like Alex Smith will start. He will start for the Niners on Monday night against the Bears. So he looks okay passing his tests. So we'll see what happens with, you know, Jay Cutler and stuff. But, you know, one thing I would say about this and this college basketball season, what's so great about it all is that, you know, we get to see it all play out. And obviously football is headed there. But, you know, when you have that tournament when now 68 teams and you see, like, you know, like Lehigh upset Duke and you see these different games, it's so incredible. You know what I mean?
It's the best sporting event to me in the world because even though I love football and I love NBA and I love it, but to think about it, in 2 weeks, you crown a national – 2 weeks and a couple of days.
Yeah, 3 weeks.
You crown a national championship, a national champion because you had to win 6 games. Nobody got a bye. I mean, the two teams, I guess, you know, 66 or 69 have to win 7 games. But let's say that doesn't happen. So you have to win 6 games. That's it. No, you know, nobody did you any favors.
You earn it on the court.
And brackets and all that stuff. But ultimately, you have to win 6 games. You have to win three two-game tournaments. So – unbelievable, unbelievable. March Madness is nothing like it. There's absolutely nothing like March Madness. It's the best, you know, it's the best show on turf. It's fantastic. Can't wait.
Yeah, nah, it's no joke, man. Well, listen, let's get into some NBA. Before we talk about some of these games last night and some preview, some stuff tonight, obviously there was a small trade. The Bobcats trade their guard, Matt Carroll, right, of Notre Dame fame, to the New Orleans Hornets, who used to be the Charlotte, you know, Hornets, Charlotte. I think teams need to give their names back. But anyway, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, why are the Utah Jazz called the Utah Jazz?
Right. But let me finish for Hakeem Warrick. Right, so they trade for Hakeem Warrick. And so I think actually it's not bad for the Bobcats because Hakeem Warrick can, you know, help them out with some, you know, 3-4 slashing and be a good bench player for that team. And I like him with Gilchrist and Gerald Henderson and Mullins and Kemba
Walker.
Yeah,
they got more athletic. He can block a shot.
They beat the Pacers the other night.
Bit.
The Bobcats are playing some ball. I like that. They're playing some ball. And I think Carroll can help a little bit with some shooting, you know, for the
right,
Hornets.
Especially with
Eric Gordon is out.
Uncertainty. Yeah.
With Gordon being out.
Help them score a little bit.
So I like it for both teams. Obviously, there's some issues with Royce White, you know, with the Rockets and receiving fines. I mean, you know, what's hard with Royce White is that he's got that condition and he has that anxiety and, you know, doesn't want to travel and, you know.
They want to send him to the D League, and I wonder if that's punitive or if that's because of his game or because of his perceived attitude because, you know, he's a rookie and so soon a first rounder and so soon into the season they already want to send him down to the D League. Have they
seen
enough?
Well, no, but that's not uncommon, right? I mean, the Rockets just sent down Machado and Montiunas. The Celtics just assigned Chris Joseph and Fab Melo down to the D-League. So a lot of guys are going down to the D-League because then they get to play.
I guess it helps. I guess.
So
the guy was he come out as a junior from Iowa State. It's not like he's a
– No, he's got
the
talent. I think it's just more about the fact that he really has that issue with the traveling. And, you know, they said they would try to work on it with – you know, depending on, you know, how they get to different arenas and, you know, but he really can't take flying. And so it's just one of those things that's kind of unfortunate. It's got to work itself out. But, you know, what's going on with the Pacers? Let me tell you something. Gerald Green is not the answer with Paul George at the two, but with your boy Danny Granger out, they can't score. They had another game last night they lost in the
70s. They lost to the Raptors. Now,
that's
embarrassing at home. The Raptors
but
had only won one
game. This is the thing.
Game.
And lost to the Bobcats, I think, at home, too, the other night. So this is the problem. Maybe they need to just either make a trade, move west and get something, or – you got to go ahead and sign Pietrus. He can score. Like, get somebody that can help you out. I'm baffled. You know, I don't get it.
Well, the problem is you look up and down their lineup, and, you know, David West isn't what he was 3-4 years ago, certainly not what he was when he was playing with Chris Paul. And then Paul George is kind of that sort of dynamic player, but, you know, he's streaky. Roy Hibbert is really just a defensive presence that maybe can get you some – maybe get you a couple of baskets and, you know.
Well, he needs to step up, right? They thought he would do more, and maybe they shouldn't have matched that offer. And Hibbert is not, you know, but he needs to step up. Hibbert and West can score pretty much on anybody. That should be a pretty good power forward center. Look, when they're all there, right, you could argue that Granger, West, and Hibbert could be in the top five front courts in the NBA. With the Knicks, with Miami.
Yes,
with...
but all the dynamic play comes from Granger. Because the other two are just kind of solid lunch bucket, you know, lunch pail type of players. So the dynamic players that can create their own shots and create for others and really shift the attention of the defense towards them is really just George and Granger. And you're asking George Hill to be a scoring point guard and probably do a little too much. And so last night he put up 20 shots. You don't really want your point guard putting up 20 shots, but nobody else on the team can do it. And they started Lance Stevenson at the other guard. I mean, they really – and Gerald Green came off the bench for 28
minutes.
And they
got Augustine. Give Pietrus, right? Pietrus is not great, but what he can do is he can play some defense. He's athletic, and he's a legitimate three. He's about 6'7", and he could score. You know, maybe he'll get you 15 a game, but at least he's consistent when he does play in terms of scoring, and he's played
like
with winning
name.
Teams.
You just want to say his name.
Mikal Pietrus. But I will say this. Our Knicks are 5-0, another double-digit win. You know, but at least Orlando gave them some run, right? They had to come back. But
yeah,
what I like about
the
Knicks.
They were trailing in the fourth quarter.
Yo, I loved it. What happened was, honestly, fourth quarter, Jason Kidd, Smith, and Mello. You know, Felton had a couple nice passes and alley-oops to Chandler. But, man, I mean, Smith went out for a bit. Kidd came in, and then they brought Smith back, and he started shooting again. And, yo, they're deadly. I mean, Smith
I have
has
to tell
six,
you. I have to tell you, yeah. That to me, the key to this team, you know what you're going to get from Mello. He's a little bit, you know, he had that couple of plays where he was arguing with the refs and didn't come back. But for the most part, his attitude has been great. But to me, J.R. Smith and kind of the stabilization of J.R. Smith, because J.R. Smith now, he might go in a game where he goes, you know, 3-for-17. But it hasn't happened yet. But more than that, he seems like his whole game has matured. It's like he's a fine wine and it finally matured. It's like everything
Well, not
is
just
clicked.
That, though. It's the effort. He's playing
effort.
D. He's stealing. And I think it's Kidd. I think Jason Kidd is contagious. And I love Ronnie Brewer.
Right. Everybody they added this time around. So think about this. So Mike Woodson takes over at the end of last year, or towards the end of last year, defensive coach. Ronnie Brewer, first thing you think about, defense. Marcus Camby, defense. Kurt Thomas, defense. Jason Kidd, all-around
player.
Rasheed
can play good
D
in the post.
And tends to, you know, tough guy, tends to play D. But you brought in five guys, and they're all about defense. So J.R. Smith says to himself, I mean, I don't know if it's consciously or subconsciously, but he's like, you know what? I really need to improve my game and really need to play in control and play some more D and give more effort. And Carmelo's
well, I think,
giving
you know,
effort.
Woodson, he said to these guys, and they're, you know, and they're, you know, as they're leaving for the end of the season, he told them, look, when you guys come back and improve your game, and we're going to play some defense. And he set the tone early in training camp. We want to be the best defensive team in the NBA this year, and right now they are. You know, they really are, and I think it's great. And I don't see, you know, obviously, look, this big game Thursday in San Antonio, and then we go play against Dallas Friday. But this is what we need to do, you know, to win. We've got to play tough defense. And
well, let me ask
you something.
What happens when Amari comes back?
Amari and Shumpert. Mainly Amari, right? Shumpert plays defense, and he'll work in, and we'll just have to stretch out the minutes. I don't know with Amari. To me, it's all about the coach. What does Woodson say to him? Does Woodson say, look, we're going good. I need you to come off the bench with JR, be my sixth man, and JR my seventh man, whatever you want to call it. But I need you to be my, you know, you two are the guys off the bench. You're going to get your minutes. We'll probably play you at the end of games. But right now, my starting lineup and just the way we're going is working so good. You know, maybe that's what he tries to sell to Amari. But I think they're not going to rush Amari back. I think they're going to not just let that knee heal, but then he's going to, you know, probably spend a couple days, if not a week or two, like, you know, just getting into basketball shape, practicing, and, you know, just, you know, getting the endurance back. And
might hold him
think,
out of a back-to-back.
Well, I think you'll see him. I don't think you're going to see him until sometime late in December. Now, Shumpert, they're talking about in January, but I don't think there's any rush. Look at how we're playing. Well, you know, listen, even Novak is moving his feet and playing D. And what's so great about Novak, he's actually taking a couple dribbles offensively to get his shot nowadays. He's not just, you know, although when you give it to him, if you throw him the right pass, ooh, his shot is deadly, man. Novak is good. You know what's great? Novak is going to be in the three-point competition this year, man.
Good.
Yeah, he's a sharpshooter.
Big Steve.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so Knicks
and
are looking good.
Team,
you know,
him and Dwayne Wade.
I don't love, you know me, I don't love living by the three. So you live by the three, you die by the three. But I love the defense. I love the defense. I love the teamwork. I love the camaraderie. It's almost like
last
year.
Well, they're sharing
the
ball. I don't think
the
they're just like gunning up threes like D'Antoni, right? The threes are coming out of the natural flow of the offense. They're passing it a lot and they're sharing the ball. I like how they're getting the threes. Now, we don't have a true post-up game, so we do some pick and rolls, but – you know, Felton's doing that, and Melo's getting shots all over the court. So I think it's happening organically. Look, we could be like Detroit 8-0 or Washington 0-6. Those fans, what do they have to look forward to?
Nothing. They could combine
Nathan.
Those teams, and they wouldn't be any good.
Nathan.
They could
you know,
could take
so,
the best six players on each of those teams and get or you know, put a 12-man roster together, and they're still not any good. But speaking of D'Antoni, let's talk about these Lakers. So what did you think about this Lakers-Spurs game last night?
You know, the whole time watching it, I just felt like the Spurs are going to win. I mean, it's not a knock on the Lakers, and I think, you know, when D'Antoni comes, you know, and it's so funny because I was listening back to the old show, and I was like, ah, Tate kind of predicted it. I was like, yo, D'Antoni's probably going to be the guy, and sure enough, he is. And I say this, right? He is a master at spacing, floor spacing, and I think that will definitely help the Lakers. And as far as the defensive criticisms, I think defense is not only about effort, but it's also about talent. So having Artest, Kobe, and Howard, he'll probably have a better defensive team than he ever had because he never had defenders as good as, you know, potentially those guys. So we'll see what happens with the Lakers, and I think their issue hasn't been defense. They're in the middle of the road. Their issue has been turnovers, and they need Steve Nash back and just, you know, offensive fluidity. And I think they struggled to get a good shot even last night at the end of the game. They couldn't get a good shot to win, and Gasol shooting, you know, in some weird places. I think it's about Tony Parker.
Had a nice shot. He just couldn't hit it. And you're right. Gasol, kind of the ball died with him when they got it into him at the end of the game. But still, they only scored, what, 82 points, right?
So, 82 points, yeah. So that's what I mean. And you notice outside, it's just Jody Meeks. No one else can hit a consistent shot. And Jody Meeks hasn't found his game yet. So, you know, D'Antoni will, I think, make the game easier for Kobe. I still think that the team will struggle, but they're so talented. You got to believe, despite Mickey Mouse could coach this team, and I feel like they're still going to get to the Western Conference Finals or deep, at least deep into the playoffs. I think OKC overall will be too tough. But the problem I don't like with OKC is that they need to play old boy that was doing something in the preseason. They got to really develop him because he could be something different, and that's Percy Jones III. Percy needs to play because he's long and he can be a little bit of a mismatch for certain teams.
Wow.
So they're not really working him in the rotation. And they're thinking Serge Ibaka is going to be, you know, develop more and more offensively. And I just don't know if I rely on Serge because him and Kendrick Perkins don't do nothing offensively.
Well, that
so
was what
me,
got
I would,
in trouble in the first game of the finals when –
That's
when,
exactly right.
When
and
those
so
two
to me,
be
then
the
you want a guy.
Time.
Yeah, so then to me, you want a guy like, you know, you're going to have Collison come in, but then you want Percy Jones to come in because he could potentially get you some offensive, you know, rebounds that he could score. You know, he's like a little bit of a rich. He could be a rich man's Anthony Randolph, right? Who people loved, you know, all these years and never did anything, but now is playing good at the Minnesota. Minnesota Timberwolves are looking good. But yo, let's give a shout out to Brooklyn, yo, the Brooklyn Nets. You know, for our New York heads, Brooklyn Nets 4-2. You know, they got a matchup coming up with the Celtics. Good win last night at home. You know, they probably could easily be, 5-1. But
yeah, we're trying to get Billy King on the show, so we're working for you fans out there.
Yeah, we got to get Billy King on. We'll see what we could do and chop it up with Billy. But you know, that team, look, they went up and Varejao and Kyrie and Waiters were in town and they handled them. I mean, you know, they made a little run, but Brooklyn looked good. Joe Johnson had 27, had a big game, and I just think that, you know, the question for them when they get to the playoffs is that size inside. I don't know if Reggie Evans, Humphreys, and Blatch and Lopez, that four-man rotation, is going to be enough. So
really?
You know, we'll see.
I love it. I think they're solid inside. I think that rotation, throw in also Gerald Wallace, who can play big if you want to play, you know, a faster lineup, or if you want to play that huge lineup, he can play the small forward. I like
but
that
you
rotation.
You can't – you love it
Lopez,
more offensively.
Humphreys,
you can't love. I don't think you can love Humphreys and Lopez for any solid defensive strength. I don't think they can defend the post that well. So I think that could be an issue. You know, and
yeah, that's true. I mean, they all rebound, but it's like those
they rebound
those
and score,
rebounds.
Right? But
yeah,
they're not. You know,
but who's
going to
kill
them
in the post again? You know, we keep talking about Miami as that's their biggest weakness, their deficiency is that hole in the middle. Chris Bosh not going to kill anybody in the post. He might kill you, you know, in that sort of in-between game, that high-low action. but he's not really going to just drop step it on you and give you problems in the post. So the Celtics, I mean, even Kevin Garnett's playing away from the basket these days. So really the top two teams in the Eastern Conference aren't going to take advantage of their lack of post defense for the Nets. So I think the depth that they can throw out there. And then at the end of the game, you know, you need a big shot. Well, look, Brook Lopez is still a seven-footer, so he's a matchup problem. But to me, those two guards, you know, and then Marshawn Brooks off the bench, but those two guards, that's a problem.
And C.J. Watson. No, no. Listen, I think Brooklyn's going to be good this year. You know, shout out to my man Ricky Rivers. He's Mr. Brooklyn. He loves his Brooklyn Nets. And I definitely, you know, I think that they've got something. I just want to see – I don't know. I just want to see. I don't know if any, like, you know, Darren Williams, I love him, but I don't know if any one guy on that roster to me has said, 3 seconds left, give it to me, I'll take it, I'm going to win it for it.
He will.
I'm not
he
saying,
will. Can this
no, no,
be,
I'm not saying he won't shoot it. I'm just saying, like, he's got the most ha. You know, he's got the most ha on that team. He's the crazy horse, but I just don't know if he's always going to be good
can
or clutch enough.
Can this team be the 2004 Detroit Pistons, one of those teams that just is a solid team? They got a little more star power here with Joe Johnson, and you could argue
right,
they're better
but I see
than
what you're saying.
Rip Hamilton.
Listen,
but
hey,
you know,
Bullups and Hamilton were just as good in some ways, as solid as Joe and D. Will.
Darrell Williams and Joe.
Well, they're probably a little bit more athletic.
Yeah, bigger, athletic. But, yeah, but speaking of Brooklyn, though, I mean, I think it's about time to make that transition. We need to get into our Where You At Wednesday segment.
I'm touching my heart here, man.
So,
listen, why don't you
don't know, yeah, let's break it down.
I'm going to just start off with the name Sweet Pea. He was born... My man's a Virgo. September 4th, 1967, Sweet Pea Boyd Daniels, born in Brooklyn, New York. And that right there, just the name for those who know about street ball, know about just high school legend, know about the hype, 6'7", two guard, point guard. He could play one and two, could play the three. Lloyd Sweet Pea Daniels was incredible. Why don't you tell him about his high school play?
Yeah, I didn't see LeBron James play live. I saw him on TV at St. Mary's in Akron. So, you know, LeBron might be the man. But from my own eyes, Lloyd Daniels, the best high school basketball player I ever saw. He was unbelievable. You looked at him, and this is back in the days when, you know, Anthony Hardaway was doing his thing as kind of a big guard, and, of course, Magic at 6'9 was really the man. But really, guards were small. Guards were like Kenny Anderson, who was also a phenomenal high school basketball player out of New York. But to
incredible.
Do the things that he
Art
did at 6'7", you know, you were like, wow, Sweet Pea's got some game. And
well, tell everybody
you know,
where he went. Break down
so
the high school journey, right?
Yeah, he attended 5 different high schools. And so you knew that he was a bit of a problem in terms of, you know, settling him down.
A bit of a knucklehead.
And then eventually made his way into Jerry Tarkanian's world and was supposed to play at UNLV.
Never happened.
He got into some issues with the law enforcement, and he was at a crack house, and he got caught buying drugs from an undercover cop, and then eventually got in. I think he got shot and had a bullet in his elbow or something like that.
Man,
so,
this is back in 80. This was 80.
89, I think. 86, 87 was his end of his college or his high school senior year. But this guy was unbelievable, Lloyd Daniels. And, in fact, he did, after all those trials and tribulations, he did end up going into the NBA. And he ended up making it on several teams in the NBA. He ended up going to the NBA and NBA. And he had a few games where he was a stat stuffer, where he was throwing up 20 points, 6 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 steals. So
doing a little bit of everything.
all of that, despite not being in the league right out of college, having to go to junior college and then going to the CBA and then the USBL.
Yep. Finally got with the Spurs in 92-93.
Yeah, got with the Spurs for a couple years where Tarkanian was his coach and for 20 games, and then ended up playing a little bit with the Sixers and the Lakers, the Kings and the Nets. So he stretched out over 7 or 8 years in the pros. Ended up playing in foreign countries, in Puerto Rico and Turkey and Greece.
New Zealand. Yeah.
And had, you know, almost a 20-year career as a professional.
Crazy.
If you have access to YouTube and this stuff is up there, and again, this was back in the late 80s when they weren't filming.
But where was he
the
star
right
at
now.
In high school? Was he at Our Savior Lutheran as well?
No. He was in Brooklyn. He went to Westinghouse. He went to a couple of Catholic schools, and then he went to Oak Hill for a minute. I think he went to, in total, he went to 5 high schools. So, you know, any kid, your high school career is only 4 years. So anytime
he even played in the USBL. Remember the USBL?
For a minute, yeah.
For a minute with the Tampa Bay T-Dogs. That's hilarious. you don't know nothing about those Tampa Bay T-Dogs, yo.
Oh, my God.
Venezuela.
So to all of our fans out there, our young fans especially, but even our older fans, if you know where Lloyd Daniels is, give us a shout-out. Give us a shout-out on Twitter, on Facebook. Send us an email and say,
where are you at?
Wait,
I got to tell you something. One of our old where you at, Vita Blue, right, was so crazy. He was on MLB Network today, and Vita Blue was, you know, great pitcher that we talked about on the A's and the Giants. He's actually in the Giants organization, so he got another ring. But he was talking about Vita was the first cat to have his first name on the jersey. They put Vita on the name because they were talking about all the nicknames, Catfish Hunter, yada, yada, yada. So he had Vita True Blue. And since he was junior, his pops had passed away, he didn't want the whole True Blue. So in high school, he played football, and he had the number 14. So then he switched his jersey number for 35 to 14, and they gave him one day in San Francisco and Oakland the jersey with the last of his first name, not Blue, but Vita on the back.
Oh, I didn't even know that. So,
that's a crazy story.
Are you telling me
Vita Blue? Yeah, man, he had the first name on the jersey. But
let
me say this, though, right?
Cats biting him? Wait, but are these Japanese cats now biting him? Ichiro?
Can I tell you, Vita Blue is a hero the most. But let me say this, though, about Lloyd Sweepy Daniels, man. The one thing that I loved about him is that when you did get to see him, he was a showman, right? Lloyd had one of them games where, like, you just felt like, wait a minute. Is he really going to do this? You know, he could sort of pass like magic. He could shoot. He could penetrate. Sweepy was sick.
We didn't and like I said, we didn't have a lot of that at 6'7" going on. You know, the only person I can think of is Anfernee. Don't call me Penny. Anfernee Hardaway. At that size with that kind of ability. Nowadays, it's a little more common. You know, you got guys at that size
be
doing
6'7"
it.
And handle
at
a rock
6'7"
like that.
To do that, yeah. In high school.
Imagine if he would have ever got to play at UNOVITO. I mean, that's the thing. And you know what? That kind of that whole thing with him and the investigation, that kind of brought down Tarkanian and the end of his career at UNOV, too, which is kind of, you know, sad. But, yeah, man, that was great. That was great. So listen, we're gonna have to talk about some fantasy basketball next show on Friday. We'll have to break down our rosters this week. In one of our leagues, Ray and I are battling each other: E-Complete versus Finger Roll. You gotta like that name, Finger Roll.
The one thing could do is Finger Roll. Shout out
right.
George Gervin.
Now, normally, two of my names are normally Clapboards Crew, and Get Off Me. That's my other name that I normally like to use for fantasy basketball. Get Off Me, because when I play ball, I'd be like, tell cats, get off me. So we'll see you on Friday. Check us out. We'll be back, and hopefully the Dolphins can beat the Bills. We'll root for our boy Hank, and, so he's not heartbroken.
And you're rooting for Ryan Tannehill. Tell everybody, you know.
Ryan Tannehill. Listen, let's let the Knicks win Thursday night. Check out the Heat and Clippers tonight, right? And also the Memphis Grizzlies
at the Thunder on ESPN. Two good games. So we will see Chris Paul and Wade and LeBron go at it. LeBron is beasting. So, but, you know, thanks for listening, man. And
yeah, we had a great time. Hopefully we brought you some pleasure and some enjoyment. And we'll see you on Friday. Ray and Tay, we're out.
Talking sports with friends. Peace.